which affect our country, matters which will be able to take our country forward, particularly economically. Indeed, we will be dealing with the most important things, conventions. As South Africa, as South Africans, we belong to the world of nations, and it is important that as we shall be dealing with conventions, particularly international conventions, we always have at the back of our mind that what we shall be doing is in the interest of the country, but also making sure that we belong to the, in a true sense, to the world of nations. We have dealt with two conventions which actually were crucial on matters of marine, and we are now continuing, we shall be continuing to deal with the conventions, Nairobi International Conventions on the removal of wrecks. We also, throughout the day, will be interacting and engaging with the AG and the department. And let me outright say to you, Acting DG, that we are of the belief that this time around, we will not be disappointed. We were really disappointed in the last interaction with the department, particularly dealing with the first quarter issues. And we believe that as the Acting Director General, you must quality assure the work that comes from the department to the committee so that we work harmoniously and we work in the interest of making sure that this department becomes one of the best departments. We're looking forward to our engagement, in particular with the Auditor General on matters of the department, but we're also hoping that our discussions on these international conventions will be the critical discussions. Without much ado, do we have apologies, Madam Secretary? Honorable Mushiela Orengor Mabika, these are the two apologies that we received. We hope that the other honorable members who will join us as we will be moving. Honorable Sibande would request to be recused around midday, as there will be other matters that he will be engaged with. Can we look at the agenda? Honorable De Freitas?
I'm sorry, Chair. I see that the I had worked on the presumption on the original email that said we would end earlier today. I see the latest one that we're ending later. So I'm sorry about that, but I also need to leave a little bit early. I based it on the early information.
There's a request that you maybe must refuse your request, because we all knew that today we're going to take the whole day. I don't know where you got that email from, because I never got it. I never got that email, and I knew that today is a whole day's work. And the email even went to an extent of saying that lunch will be provided. So yours is a ghost email.
No, Jay, sorry. The original email said that the last presentation would end about 1:30. And then later on, I saw that the presentation carried on much later. And I've subsequently made arrangements in that regard. There were changes, and I can show it to you on my computer, which you were copying on.
We are agreeing, myself and Honorable Musinga, that you won't leave. We'll cross that bridge when we arrive at it anyway. Can we request the department through the acting DG to take us through the conventions? The first one will be on the wrecks, and then the second one will be on the committee. Yeah. Then we'll be able to take it up from there. Then we'll see. I'm just saying, Honorable Dictators, the likelihood is that we may even finish earlier, depending on how honorable members behave. The more questions you ask, the more we will be here for the whole day. But I'm not stifling your comments and questions anyway. Gigi. Yeah, definitely. They must just stop. Gigi, ride on, brother.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. I'm also a very good follower of Clarence Carter. thank you so much, Honorable Chair, and good morning, Honorable Members. Up front, I must apologize, Chair. You know the saying that when the Murphy's Law, you know, when things go wrong, they really go wrong. I'm sure you saw last week, I was there were triple bookings. I guess even the issue of the email and the presentation that was sent here, it's been wrong, because I know myself, the DM, and the Chief Financial Officer worked on a presentation, finalized that presentation, and that was to the presentation that was to be made. Because the previous week we had made the presentation to score on the same issues, so there wasn't to be any change. So I absolutely and honestly would want to upfront put an apology. I know the minister raised this sharply with me with the DM, but yesterday she indicated that she had had a discussion with me as well. And I honestly want to apologize. So things indeed do happen as they did last week. I also left because she told me to come in and leave because I thought the presentation was my honest and humblest apologies. And I hope members take that as a mistake and a genuine mistake. We'll never make that mistake. To the committee. And I want to assure you that this department and its senior leadership, led by myself, do not take this committee for granted. So my apologies, Chair. On the matter of, before us is the ratification of the Nairobi Convention on the removal of rats. I'm sure many members know that at high seas accidents happen and we find them on our roads and they are wrecked. And therefore, they ought to be removed, and there is a protocol on how we deal with that. The Nairobi Convention, therefore, is a convention that sets out how and what ought to be done. Before I do that, let me introduce the team that I have with me. On the my team left is Mr. Bernard Mpahlele. He's in the Department of Transport. Normally comes when we deal with matters maritime. Next to me is Sipho Mata, the head of legal for SANSA, who's working with us very close on these matters. On my immediate right is Mr. Pumlani Mbeki, who is in maritime as well. Next to Mr. Mbeki is Mrs. Lunga Lubisi, our head of strategic planning in the office of the Director General. So she next time, her and Sipho are the ones that must quality assure if there's failure. No, but I'm joking. Next to her is Mthunzi Madia, who is the director responsible for this matter, which is policy and legislation. On the extreme right next to the name, on the at the end of the table is Monjo Mkhalisi, who is also director and stakeholder engagement in the office of the Director General. That's the team, Chairperson and Honorable Member, that we have brought. Move on. The overview, Chairperson, that we would want to first give honourable members the purpose, give a brief introduction of IMF and IMO, and then the third area is the adoption of the convention, and then I will then get the team to talk to the nitty-gritty, the issues around the articles of the convention, the provisions, and the interests to the Republic, And then, of course, the consultative processes that we are required in terms of intergovernmental relations to undertake and to get to a point where we bring matters before the committee and before Parliament. And lastly, is the issue around the implementation of the convention. In brief, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, that we the purpose of us coming here today is really to ask three things. One is really to state the intention of the Republic or of the government of the Republic to ratify the Nairobi International Convention on Removal of Rights, because South Africa, with respect to IMO, and these are the issues I wanted to get into. In the sub-Saharan Africa, we are the responsible party that coordinates matters of rescue, matters of that nature, so that in the event there is a wreck and there's rescue that needed to be undertaken, some Saharan needs to deploy its capacity to deal with that. That's how far reaching the exercise and the request we're making. The failure for us as the government and the Republic to not ratify this presents dangers as far as that must, because that's our area of responsibility on behalf of IMO. So that's what we want to do, but we want to ratify this. And then the second issue is to humbly request the Transport Portfolio Committee to recommend that we table this convention for the full Parliament to ratify the convention after you've engaged. And in the program, I see there's space for the committee to discuss and come up with a report after our presentation. And would humbly request that you consider the request favorable. And then lastly is that we ask you to note the contents of this presentation. Just a brief background, that IMO, of course, all of us as we know, is a UN body that deals with matters maritime on behalf of the United Nations, looking at safety, security, and marine environment protection. And of course, it's led by a Secretary General that reports directly to the Secretary General of the United Nations. We've been a member of the IMO, Honorable Chair, since 1995. And we are a member in the Council of the IMO. Last year, we went with the Minister to Council for, we had bid to be part of the 30-member Council. And indeed, we collected the second highest number of votes behind Singapore. So that is an indication of, one, the trust, but secondly, the honor and the regard that the international community has for South Africa. And therefore, it is our view that we would not want to fail the international community by not discharging our international obligations in the manner in which they think we should and we ought to. And therefore, the ratification of the convention is one such manner through which we would honor the trust that the international community places on South Africa. And we are a member at one point, I don't know, but I'm sure SAMHSA will confirm this. We were a deputy chair of one of the committee, the technical committee, with deputizing the Americans. So indeed, the message is that we are being taken seriously as a maritime nation. We also need to take ourselves here, and we are taking ourselves here. And I suppose being party and signature to this convention is such an indication. And therefore, Chairperson, that's the background. The next slide, we want to talk to the issue what was referred to as the adoption of the convention. As I said, there is an international protocol on the removal of convention. We therefore need to
gradually the removal of and the convention provides that protocol. And our view, therefore, is that if we are to regulate, we need to localize and domesticate. And ratify this convention, we'll have to make amendments to our Merchant Shipping Act, so that that then becomes the domestication of the convention. In this slide, we want to talk to four key things. One, it seeks to define what a wreck. A wreck means a sunk, stranded ship or part of it, and objects that is or was on board a derelict ship, provided that it is not under salvage assistance. I'm sure you'd know that South Africa, through SAMHSA, we also do salvage operations. You remember the last time we were here, we were talking about the adoptions of two annexes, Annex 4 and Annex 6 of the MARPOL Convention. Annex 6 was dealing with pollution that's been, pollution from ships, air pollution, the other one was pollution from ships. So there are those issues. So there is a symbiotic relationship between these conventions and how you deal with certain aspects. So salvage is something separate, but also is how you then deal with this removal of these ships. The second issue is that there is a need to set a uniform rule to deal with wrecks. And that therefore was dealt with and raised by the legal committee of the International Maritime Organization. And of course it took years to be developed. At the 92nd session of the legal committee, this draft was therefore approved and was therefore adopted at the diplomatic conference in 2007 in Nairobi, and that's why it's referred to as Nairobi Convention. Many members would know there is what we call also a Cape Town Convention, and that's the Victoria Molinos Convention. The STCWF. So where a convention has been adopted, the general term is to use the city of adoption as the name of the convention. And therefore South Africa participated in the diplomatic conference and was one of the states that also signed the convention. And then what I would ask is to ask USIPA to then go ahead and then deal with the articles and begin to explain what each of the articles are meant to do and what therefore the role of South Africa will be. Of course, there's Mthunzi on the other side who will also end, but I'll ask the people to lead the presentation. Thank you, Chairperson, if you don't mind.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and good morning to the Honourable Members. As the DG has stated that there are a number of articles that are contained in the convention, but we only mentioned a few, which is Article 1 to Article 5, which is just the standard of the convention. And Article 6, it deals with the detonation of a hazard. So not all the wrecks that are on our waters, they pose a hazard. So it is the responsibility of the state to make that determination of whether the wreck is a hazard or not. And Article 7 to Article 8, it talks about locating and marking of wrecks. These articles, they relate to if there is a wreck, the ship owner has to report the wreck, and also the ship owner's responsibility is to locate and mark the wreck. That will ensure that those who use the seas for navigation, they don't collide to the particular wreck. And we've got Article 8, which talks about measures to facilitate the removal of the wreck. So currently, this is the responsibility of SAMHSA to facilitate that the ship owner removes the wreck, or SAMHSA calls the ship owner to remove the wreck. Article 10 and Article 11, it talks about the liability of the ship owner, and also there are exceptions to those liabilities. You know that one of the exceptions is that if the ship owner, if the ship became a wreck due to war, hostilities, or supervening impossibilities, or we call it act of God, then the ship owner will not be liable to remove, mark, and locate the wreck. That's an exception. Then we've got Article 12. Article 12 requires all ship owners to have compulsory insurance of financial security. So all ships that will be coming to South Africa that are 300 gross ton or more will be required to have that insurance on board. In case then that ship sunk or it gets stranded, it will be covered by the insurance. This is just an illustration of the provisions of the convention and the interest to the country. Basically, it clarifies the rules on the rights and obligations of the coastal state, which is South Africa, and the ship owner in dealing with wrecks. It gives the coastal state the right to request the ship owner to remove the wreck from its exclusive economic zone. But also, the convention goes further and says the state can have an option to extend the application of the convention to its territorial waters. And further, it puts the ability on the ship owner to report, locate, mark, and remove the wreck. And also, the last one, I'm repeating it, that it imposes the compulsory financial security for the ship owner to have that insurance. Currently, we've got the internationally recognized insurance, which we call it PNI, which is based in London. So mostly of the ship owners, they use those that insurance for cover. On consultation process, we took this convention and we sent it to Department of Justice and DECO for scrutiny, and we got two legal opinions, and both of those legal opinions, they supported the ratification of the convention. And also there were other relevant government departments, agencies and industry that were consulted, and they have not objected to the adoption of the convention. That includes SAMHSA, TNPA, Maritime Law Association, Association of Shipping Lines, Smith Amanda, the International Fund for Animal Welfare, and Environmental Affairs. We also got a ministerial approval for the CAP memo, and this convention was also presented before ICTS cluster and the cabinet, and they both supported the ratification of the convention. On the implementation of the convention, currently SAMHSA is responsible for the implementation of some of the provisions of the convention. But basically, when this convention has been adopted, it will require the review and the enactment of new legislation so that the convention can be enforced. As we know that some of the conventions are not self-imposing. They require South Africa to domesticate national legislation for it to be implemented. Then SAMHSA will use its host state control regime to implement the provisions of the convention and the regulations. And we've got implications, which are financial, and other one is communication implications. This convention will not impose any additional financial implications to the country, basically because the provisions of the convention will be enforced by SAMHSA, and they've got ability and capacity to carry such a function. On communication, and we've got Article 20 of the convention that requires the member state to deposit an instrument of ratification to the Secretary General of the IMO. And I think in the last one, we would like to request the committee to approve the convention to be tabled before Parliament, and also to now to note the content of this presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. There we are. The proposal has been tabled to us for ratification and tabling in plenary of Parliament. Discussions, questions, clarifying questions are put to yourself. Honourable Mulaudzi, we were very excited that you will not come to this meeting today. You can ask Honourable Hadebe as to why. I'm not going to divulge the reason. Honourable Ramatakama, you will be the first one. Honourable Musinga, you will be the second one. There's no conversations in my meetings. Otherwise, as a class teacher, I will chase you out. Because there's no corporal punishment, that's the best thing I can do. Honourable Mlaudzi, you'll be the second one. Honourable Sibande, along those lines. Let's start with Honourable Ramatlaka.
Well, thank you very much, Honourable Chair, and the Acting DG on the presentation. Just before we come to the acceptance of the proposal, as we have already moved, let me ask perhaps just three questions. The first one is where you ended about domestications and legalizations. what you didn't say in terms of the program leading to the domestications of it, or are you talking simultaneously that the convention becomes law, but you still have to. But what's the program that is the back of that? If you could just give us an indication so that we know. Second question is that on Article 12, you do list what are the conditions. But what I just want to ask, how do you actually shows that which is stipulated in Article 12 is adhered to, in terms of making sure that insurance upfront, that payment that is secured is there. Is a party state of the country, of the origin, that has to make sure that it happens? What in the event that it doesn't happen? I mean, there was this ship that was in Cape Town, you know, that and we were told that the newspaper continuously reported that they could not find the owner, and the ship was not necessarily in the quality of being on shipping. But Article 12, and I'm just trying to understand in terms of the capacity, how does this work together in terms of making sure that it happens? Just the last one, I did promise just the three. I note in your presentation that it has been from 2007, and now it's 2014. Probably looks like more than a term. It's getting into a second term since the acceptance of the convention. I just want to find out if it can get approval. Why is this taking so long to get to requesting the government and parliament ratification of it? And during those period, what has been assisting you in terms of addressing this? I note that SADC, South Africa, is the only country that has the, but I'm just trying to find out going forward in terms of a program, in terms of the convention itself, the other SADC country
in terms of the program in supporting the, because obviously we know we have a coastal land that stretches across. What is it going to be the issue of the ministerial discussion coming in the SADC itself from this program of adopting it as a Southern Parliament? Just to give indication what happened. And then we'll come to your proposal.
Thank you, Chair. I see the concerns of Honourable Ramatlakane. In many ways, he covered me with these questions. Also, a concern relating to these conditions to adhere, or the conditions to adhere to this convention. Is it limited to the signatories? How would that be expanded to include all users of our territorial waters? And upon failure, what is the specific sanction that can be employed? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Lord.
Thank you, President, for brief representation, straightforward. So I just have some three clarities and questions about also the amendment of our domestic act. How far with the process as Honourable Ramatlakane said also, we mustn't be catched off guard so that we can have another 7 years to amend our own domestic. You can maybe clear us what is the status quo about the amendment of our domestic act. And I just want to know, to briefly explain to me what is the difference between MAPOL and the IMO. When do they marry each other? Just for clarity. And what about the unclaimed wealth or unclaimed rent or a deserted one? What do we do as a country if you find out from that position? Thank you, Chairman.
Thank you, Honorable Mulaudzi. For sure, you should have put it in a very simple language. The acronyms that have been used here. You wanted to be told what does IMO means, what does MAPOL mean, because these are acronyms. If you could have been Honorable Sibande.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, at least Article 12 was nearly covered by the two, but I'll come back to it. The only thing which maybe I wanted is a clarity. See, Chairperson, what is worrying me in terms of the time frames, that exactly how long it's supposed to take? Because I think you are talking about a thing which happened in 2007, and now it's 2014. If you can assist in that regard, because it's worrying. Because to me, if you're talking Article 6, a determination of hazard, you're talking about something which is very serious in sin. And then also, the thing which maybe you can assist us with, so that when it's supported, we support it wholeheartedly. So, during your input, you said on Article 6 of the determination of hazard, you said, not all wrecks that are hazard. Is it correct? You see. Chairperson, you know what is worrying me with this? You see, I'll put an example. Sea is like a human being, is so sensitive. A rope, I recall one day, the ship which is going to Robben Island, the one engine was dead because of this rope with the nets which was inside the sea, which I don't know what happened later. Then the motor couldn't run anymore, and then it was forced to be grounded so that they can send some divers and get underneath and get rid of it. So to me it's confusing when you are saying some of them are not hazard. If you can clarify us on that regard, because to me even a paper plastic, you can take a plastic for granted. The plastic can cause a problem. Because also, the propeller of the engines of these some of these ships. Once they get in the tunnel there, then you can use it or to dump it. All right, maybe if you can have another way to so that maybe it can make strong the work proposal. And then the issue of what else? Yes, you raised the issue of consultation process. I was checking slide number 8 and slide number 8 and 9. Yes. I don't know. I'm subject for correction because now we are receiving just like a lecture in terms of consultation, whether there is any structure outside this being consulted. I'll make an example. Around here at the around the people here in the Western Cape and somewhere where there is sea, there are a lot of communities who are involved, who are living there, harvesting in the sea. I'll put an example. If you go to if you go to KZN, the line of Wangwanase, there are a lot of projects which involve ordinary people on the street, like some people are not aware that there is a, we call it a fishing crawl. Yes, it can be hazardous to them, how to put, because those people must be protected as well. Where they get inside the sea, they put those crawls to trap fish and the like. Therefore, I wanted to check that in terms of your consulting, where other people except this one which we mentioned here, consulted. You know what, Chairperson, because we are avoiding a situation where we pass a bill, some people there coming and demonstrating that they have never been consulted and the like. Because the other procedures in terms of the law, yes, I'm satisfied, you've done justice. But how to take an ordinary people on the street and put them there? And to close it with that, Article 12, already they've touched it just but to seal it. Because it is alleged that in some way, somehow, no matter what, not so much affected, but in some of the seas, people are affected in terms of piracy and the like. So, those people, I wanted to paraphrase my question in terms of compliance, because if such a ship is caught, you involve that particular country where that the owner is coming from, or what is the status quo? Because the key fundamental thing, if we make any agreement, any which we're supposed to pass here, is to make people to comply. That's one of our points, is to make people to comply. So what do you do with those people? Because there are a lot of piracy, they are not accountable to anybody, but it can be from South Africa, pirating, doing all this stuff. If that person is arrested, what do you do? And then the last one, we do have this Greenpeace, what is their view on this one? Just asking. Not to say that anybody can stop us from proposing something which is going to save us. I'm just asking whether are they aware of this. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honourable Members. Are there members who would want to also engage? Honourable, all okay, thank you very much. Maybe, let me just say that there are no financial implications in this instance towards the state, which is very exciting. But as we deal with that, at the back of the mind, we will be asking ourselves as to whether in relation to the National Development Plan, what will be the impact of this that we are doing towards the National Development Plan agenda in this regard. But the other question that I would want to find out from the presenters is as to there is an indication that the warships in this instance are kind of excluded, as you will be dealing with your the removal of these rights and so forth and so forth. And I'm just thinking, in the eventuality, you've got hazardous materials such as nuclear and other related substances from the warship itself, what really will be the status in this regard of the country status towards this hazardous material which actually is in the warship? Because I've read the article, I can't remember which article is that, which is indicating that with the exclusion of the warship and other ships in this instance, what will be our approach towards that kind of an agenda which actually will also become hazardous to the state, port state in this instance? DG, let me put it to you for responses. Your team will share. Now we will start the battlefield.
Let's not be there.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson, and thanks, Honourable Members. Let me. I'm gonna respond to some, but I'll also ask the team to respond to some, particularly those that truly require that they then elaborate on a number of issues. Like Article 6, how do we deal with what, is it not all wrecks pose hazards? And we'll then get to what, how do we determine what a hazardous wreck is. And well, the first one was the issue around domestication. I'm sure all of us know that international conventions, up until they are ratified by Parliament, do not necessarily apply. So that's the first thing. But secondly is that South Africa, as a member state or a party to a convention, it binds South Africa to commit to a particular agreed international protocol. And therefore, if South Africa has participated, has ratified the convention, therefore it has an obligation to therefore domesticate. And therefore the domestication is making it a domestic law, so that we then, as a country, have a what is defined our constitution, so we then can implement, because all laws must be passed through Parliament. And therefore, even if we are member states and participants or states that have ratified a particular convention, up until Parliament has said yes, we ratify this body, because under the constitution only Parliament can ratify. So the international convention is of no force and effect in the country. So that's why it has to come through through him. In terms of the program, as Sipho said, in how we will domesticate that, there already exists regulations that through which we'll have to implement the port state, what do you call it, port state control regulations. Those are the regulations through which we'll then implement. In the event there are certain regulations that the minister needs to publish, the next step after ratification is for us therefore to draft those regulations, use those regulations for consultation, bring those regulations here like we've done all the time in Parliament, then they will then apply, because regulations are an instrument to interpret statute, and therefore the only body that provides that those instruments and the interpretation of statute is Parliament. So that one would be the problem, but in the current state is that there is no problem, it's just that we use the existing regulations under the port state control. So that's what the port state control, the PSC. Let me use the abbreviation, Honorable Lawutse, and say the PSC is the port state control. So that's what we will do. So the next, let me then talk about MARPOL. MARPOL is a convention. IMO is International Maritime Organization, so therefore IMO is the body that regulates the implementation of MARPOL as a convention. In terms of Article 12, conditions, what I would do, I'll ask, let me deal with the time frame, 2007-2014. The nature is of convention is such that, I mean, let me give MARPOL. MARPOL was the 1974, and we just brought this month and a half ago, is that there are certain articles of the convention that we may want and choose to assent to or be signatories to or want their application. So that's the first thing. But secondly, we are not forced to then domesticate or forced to participate in any convention. At the time and at the point where we think as a country we are ready, we then can come in and say, let's do. Even though we may have been a signatory to the decision that led to the adoption of the convention. Let me give a classic case. We're talking about the plastics and the environment. There is what is called the Kyoto Protocol, which comes from the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. The United States is not a signatory, you know, a party to any of us, but all of us have been pushed and forced by them to assent. And, you know, so it's up until a state is ready. I think, let me use that, up until a state is ready to then assent. I think the period is not necessarily that we delayed or anything, but it's not that up until we are ready as a state will then bring it, then I think that's what we'll do. But in the intervening period, there was a meeting of ministers of transport in Luanda, and there was a Luanda decision. I'm responding to the issue around other SADC countries. There was a Luanda decision that then led to a number of, probably three issues. The first one is to declare and say, South Africa, you are the regional and the coordination center, and that's why we have the MRCC here in Cape Town to deal with this thing. So other certain countries are parties and partners with South Africa in the implementation of some of these things, but particularly this convention. But the second issue under the convention is that some certain must therefore take the responsibility to coordinate the structure. And then thirdly is that money is generated through the coordination center, then are used by SAMHSA and the other SAMHSAs of the various other countries to develop capacity, get the necessary technologies to detect, prevent, and help in the combating. So that's what then happened. It also deals with the issues around piracy. Piracy is dealt with primarily by the defense forces because it's a security matter. And that's where then the responsibility of piracy lies. But of course, with the technology that SAMHSA has of detection, it then helps and feed information to our defense forces to then act. How far are we with domestication? As I said, the process is we can't begin to domesticate up until there's ratification by Panama. That would be what do you call it? Let me use a negotiating term. Malafides, you know, if you negotiate with bad faith. So it would be bad faith to come here and say we want and are asking this committee to endorse the request for it to table this thing in Parliament. Yet at the bottom of our sleeves or the pockets, we have already, it's malafides. As a former trade unionist, it can be. So we will not do that, Honourable Chair. I think our bona fides is such that we would come, as the Honourable Sibanda said, if there are issues that you want us to take then, we'll therefore take them, because that's the nature of the beast. In terms of consultation, we've consulted all representative organizations with respect to this, because really many and majority of the wrecks happen and get grounded in communities in and around the coast. If you go to the False Bay, there is that. So the community, it's an eyesore to the community of False Bay. Those are the affected. We've got to go out and consult as widely as possible, because ultimately they are the ones that then get affected, and so it's upon us, and it's a requirement under the constitution to do that. Honourable Chairperson, in terms of the national development plan, this falls squarely within the mandate as articulated in, I will call it Chapter 6, because it deals with the issues around the economic sector, particularly around transport. The issue around how the state deals with issues of commerce, because in the discharge of commercial activities, certain things would happen, accidents would happen, and therefore wrecks happen in that space, and therefore they would need to be dealt with as such. Let me then deal with what we determine as a hazard, Honourable Sivan. In terms of the convention, it says, when determining whether a wreck poses a hazard, the following criteria should be taken into account by the affected state. First is the type of vessel. Of course, when there is a wreck, the first thing that we all do from our side, the Department of Transport and Department of Environmental Affairs, is to drain the oil or diesel in its entirety. Because the biggest thing that creates an environmental hazard at sea is spillage. So the first thing that all of us focus on is, of course, the first is human, then the next one is therefore dealing with either oil or diesel. The next issue is therefore the size of the vessel, and therefore construction of the dam. The second issue therefore that we need to look at is the depth of water in the area or the affected area where the wreck is. So therefore that then tells us what steps to then take. And then the third area is therefore the tidal range and the currents in the area, the flow of water, and how that then would affect the how we deal and respond to the wreck. The others I'll get the team. Of course, the other issue, of course, would be if it's within our territorial waters or within, we definitely need to look at, is this an impediment to the traffic that flows? And if indeed it is, therefore it must be. So there are those issues that we will have to deal with. In terms of unclaimed deserted one, the links to issues around insurance, I'll get the team to respond to that meticulous. I'll ask Usipo and then ask Nomtunzi to come in the area, and the questions are in this form for you guys to then give a sense. But the presentation is brief, but then expand a little bit. Thanks. Go ahead.
Through you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think I will start dealing with the Article 12 of the compulsory insurance or financial security. Basically, when this convention was negotiated at the IMO, there were interest groups that were also represented, which includes the insurance companies. And they were dealing with the reputable insurance companies. One of them, then, there's a group called International Group of the PNR. That's where most of the ship owners, they insure their ships and the cargo on board. But then it was agreed at the IMO that those insurance that belong to the PNR group can issue a blue card. And that blue card, as a ship surveyor from SAMHSA, you can jump on board, you swipe the blue card, then it will tell you whether that insurance is still valid or not, and when is the termination date. And also, there was an option for the flex day or for ships to feed in the information from the database of a flex date. So when the ship is calling our South African waters, then we can make a call to verify whether that insurance on board is still valid or not, and when is the termination date. So there are those mechanisms in place to ensure that all the ships that come and leave our port are compliant to the convention. It's very critical. On the other issue, that why it took so long for us to come before the committee, even though the convention was adopted in 2007, but it was never into force, and it's still not yet into force. It will come into force in April next year. So basically there are processes, there are IMO processes before the convention can come into force. It needs a certain number of countries to be signatories or to ratify that particular convention. So this wreck removal convention, it needed at least 10 countries for it to come into force. So it has reached that stage that now there are 10 countries, but then it gave a window period of 12 months. So by next year, 2015, then the convention will be in force. On the other one, on the SADC programs, we just had a meeting early this year where the MARADS, the head of Maritime Administration in Africa, had a meeting. So one of the resolution of the MARAD was to provide technical assistance to other African countries as far as adopting the convention, and also to assist them in translating those conventions into national laws. So South Africa was identified as one of the countries that can provide that technical assistance, so that when we adopt the conventions, not only South African waters that are protected. As you know, the nature of our seas, it can move due to currency from one state to the next state, and it gets affected. So it's not only South Africa's interest to get protected as far as maritime safety, security, and marine protection. The other question was, is this convention only limited to the member state or signatories to the convention? The convention only talks to member states. If you're not a signatory or a state party to the convention, it does not apply to you. But then it was seen that as an impediment, because one country will be a signatory, another country won't be a signatory. So there will be a disjuncture in terms of trying to implement, because one of the primary intentions of the IMO is to come up with uniform standard international rules that will be accepted by international community. So seeing that gap, then they came up with a principle of no more favorable conditions, whether you're a state party or not a state party. If you're not a state party but you come into the country that is a state party, that state party will require you to comply with the convention. But if you are a state party coming to a country that is not a state party, so that non-state party cannot impose any obligation as far as the convention is concerned. The other question was, how far is the process to enact national laws? Currently there is national legislation, we call it Wreck and Salvage Act. But it only covers a very small fraction of wreck removal in terms of that act, because the primary intention of that act was to deal with salvage issues. But it happened that if you fail to salvage a ship, then it might become a wreck. So that's why that national legislation, it only deals with one section, which is section 8.18, that deals with the removal of wreck. So it has been found that, as you see that we've got so many wrecks in our waters, it's because section 18 is not quick, because it was not meant to cover all the provisions that are on the Wreck and Salvage Act, but it's only one provision. So the issue is, it will be either we amend the current legislation, or we review section 18 and we cancel it and we come up with a standalone legislation that is going to deal specifically with wreck removal. Okay, the issue of MARPOL in relation to the IMO has been answered by my DJ. And also on the issue of deserted wrecks. We've got so many wrecks in our waters. There is a convention, United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea. It subdivides our waters, or it delineates our waters. One is inland waters, which it covers your ports and harbors and bays. And the second one is territorial waters, which is 12 nautical miles. And the other one is marine cultural zone. On marine cultural zone, that's why we say we find the common heritage of the mankind. That's why you enjoy it. So there are wrecks that are on our waters, but then it's part of our waters. That's why you find the tourists, they go and do the diving, because that's why some of the fishing species and marine ecology, they build their houses on those wrecks. So that's why they strive. So not all the wrecks are imposing hazards to our waters, but they house some of our fishing species and marine ecospecies as well. On the determination of the wrecks, my DG has covered it. On the issues of NDP agenda, I think as we're coming from Operation Pakisa, that you cannot have you cannot derive economic benefits on the waters that are dirty. It's the same as what happened in Somalia. It was a fishing community, but they went there and they dumped oil, so now they cannot derive economic value by fishing. So it has a relation. The more our waters are clean, the more our waters are safe for environment protection and also for safety of navigation, then we can try to derive economic value for exploitation and exploration of living and non-living marine resources. So it's in line with our Operation Pakisa agenda.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I wanted to talk about the military vessels as to whether they do as they like at sea. There are specific conventions that Madam Chair deals with the military vessels. You spoke about the issue of nuclear. So there will be protocols and regulations that will then look at how the vessels, military vessels, behave at sea. So I just wanted to highlight that. Secondly, I wanted to talk about the insurance of vessels. You will have what we call flags of convenience, whereby the vessel will fly a flag of a particular country. In terms of ratings, those vessels then will be determined in terms of how safe that vessel should be in terms of meeting the minimum threshold of requirements. That subsequently talks to the risk that vessel carries. So meaning you'll have the elite vessels by virtue of the flags that they fly, which will then be which will have a lower risk, and we'll have those vessels that are are flying flags of convenience, which means they are just meeting the minimum threshold of what is required for the vessels to be at sea and then be able to be received in those particular ports.
Can you give examples of these vessels? Let's talk about certain countries in relation to that. Just give an example so that we have an understanding.
Any vessel, whether it's in from Europe or from USA or from Africa, can fly a vessel, a flag from any other country. For example, the Philippines. And most vessels will fly a Philippines flag because of the laws of the labor laws. They are very relaxed, so they are able to hire seafarers of average standards in terms of skills. Also, the manner in which the taxes are structured, it will also determine whether that vessel will be able to be incentivized to fly that particular particular flag state. So most of what we are seeing in the open waters or any other vessel that is on the waters, they will then look at the, like I was saying, Madam Chair, they will then look at the flag and the requirements and regulation of that flag, and then if they see it's incentivizing them, then they will adopt that one.
Can I ask Usifo to add and then to conclude?
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, thanks, Honorable Chair. I think that there is a reason why ships are flagged in a particular, or firstly, why ships are flying a flag of a particular nation. Basically, it represents a particular country. And the laws that apply to that ship is the same as the aircraft, are the laws of the country which the flag flies. In Africa, for example, we've got only one country that is mostly respected by the number of ships that are flying its flag. It might not be a ship-owning nation, but it's a nation that most ship owners and investors, they prefer to fly that particular flag. It's for a particular reason, which is Liberia. Liberia is number 3 in the world of ships that are flying its flag. Basically, we've got so many delinquent and recalcitrant ship owners. One of the reasons is to hide the identity of the true owner, because there is no genuine link between the ship owner and the flag. So it's not easy to trace who the real ship owner is. So they prefer those, we call that flag of convenience. Yeah. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to highlight those two issues, the issue of military vessels as well as the flag state. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, are there still other questions or discussions that you want to engage before we go into our exercise? Honorable Humsinga, second one will be again Honorable Ramatlaka. Thank you very much. You had some issues you want to raise?
I noted your point that you made mention of the fact that fortunately there are no financial burdens on us, because it used to be a situation where a ship owner would come into the country for whatever reason. If things don't go well, he simply leaves the country, leave behind the vessel, and there won't be any consequences. Now, government will have to secure services from private companies to do good on the cause, perhaps wasting a lot of money, anything between 50 to 300 million. So such things this convention seeks to regulate such, to make the point that we jealously guard against situations where we are exploited, people then leave, and then the burden will be left with the government. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Hunsinger.
Thank you, Chair, and I must thank the panel for giving us the quality of answers that definitely gives us a better understanding. Therefore, as I understand it, then the only group of vessel owners that we can really pressurize to get this compulsory insurance would be the ones registered in South Africa. How do we then prevent them from registering somewhere else, which is, to my understanding, not very pro-NDP, like we currently have with, you know, fleet owners of trucks, for instance, registering their vehicles in other provinces simply because the licenses are cheaper there. Now, if we also sit with, you know, comfortable labour dispensations like you would have in the Philippines with regards to people that you employ, marine and so on, certainly it's not good for us. We want our own people to employ, we want them to be treated fair, we also want all the revenue that we could generate, you know, staying at home. You know, just that aspect of risk, certainly, you know, we in support of the convention, you know, for the economic and environmental benefits, because we can't have other people leaving their wreckages behind. They must remove it, you know, on their account. So the support for this, just this sort of minor concern.
Thank you, Honorable Ramatlakane.
Honorable Chair, thanks for the responses that has been provided. Just for absolute clarity, Acting DG, in the slide you do speak about possibility of amendment of the Act. It's now been explained which Act and what section of the Act may have to be repealed and replaced. And also earlier you talked about the regulations, that what would be required would be the regulations that has to be drawn in support of the convention. So the regulation, in my understanding, is an executive function. That's an executive function. My question was really in terms of if you talk about domestication of the Act, you talk about convention, domestication of the Act, it suggests that there is something that must follow. So when you were explaining it, I wasn't quite clear as exactly what would follow. Not suggesting that you come here already under your sleeve with something under the table, but it's consequential. This is a consequential thing that must happen. But I'm happy to leave the point that perhaps we will wait for when you're ready with the particular section of the Act where it needed to be amended or repealed and replaced by a new Act or section. We're happy to wait for that period because we're not talking about that now. But you know, in your response, going back to this Article 12. It wasn't clear, specifically speaking. I think I asked this question for the second time about the ship. If you go towards Blobeck, there's a ship which is a wreck now, standing there, which was somehow, I can't remember, it was in Malaysia or somewhere. But it was said that the owner can't be found. And of course, the South Africa has to step in to make sure that it removes all the, so that the water is not polluted. There's cost associated to that. But if you don't have the point of origin in respect of the ship owner and the insurances, the ship is not in the roadworthy conditions. If you speak simple language of what then happens to that particular ship, who carries that particular can insofar as the resource or the labor, the millions that we're talking about goes into it. Specifically speaking, this ship here, there was no owner. Maybe they were flying a different flag and it was for that reason. But does the insurance cover that particular eventuality in the event that even the owner doesn't exist. It's not, it exists in a paper, but there's no actually nobody like that. The ship is not registered. Therefore, they did not pay into the kitty for the cover. What then happens is that anything that would help in that going forward, maybe they didn't put the question in that particular way. Because when you do the act, then there may have to be the area that you pick up in terms of the act, in the eventuality that the blue card doesn't exist, if something like that exists. And the last one, Chair, I respect the view that there's lots of processes that has been followed before you get to the putting countries together. But as you were explaining, I was trying to see, when was the cabinet approval? And the cabinet approval, I realized it was on the 2nd of October 2013. It's almost a year between our process, internal process, and parliament process to rectify. And I take the point that it's a delayed implementation, it's only 2015. But there's still a year in between the cabinet approval and seeking ratification by Parliament. So it's a year in between. I don't know what's the reason for that. you know the FDG, you may explain that. But in the whole...
They were in an electioneering mode then.
But in the whole, Chair, I think that we have no problem in the accepting and the ratification of the convention. I think we would, it's the thing that we need to do. We are asking questions just to be clear whether we go, this is elastic enough to address the things that we are talking about. But thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Sven.
Thank you. It's represent the disadvantage to come after many people. That a lot of things are interest. But nevertheless, you see, I need a clarity here. Also, Babu Vlande, thank you very much for your responses. As Babu Matlakala indicated, that for us is to interact with you so that we close all gaps, if there are gaps. You see, in your explanation, you link also Article 18, subject for correction. You spoke about Article 18. Yes, 18. Or Section 18. Oh, I was a little bit confused because on slide number 6, you indicated which articles of the conventions which are concerned. So I was worried that if you can maybe redefine and explain exactly what is it, how do you link it with Section you're talking about. So therefore, I'm clear. And then, I wanted to find out from you, because my concern still goes back on what was raised by Baba Tlakanda now, because of this thing of the prolonging time. I know that there's a procedure. If there is any deadline, or you just push you push for this year and leave it to other people, also they push, we don't have deadlines, time frames. Why did there is a damage in our coast, like the ship which is talking about? Like the ship which is talking about, which is standing there. That's why when I was making my example with the issue of coastal lines, I make directly specific with the people of Guanguanase, when they are busy with this fish crawl, because they are directly affected. Everything comes to them. They are there in the sea, dinghy, and these old people here. Therefore, yes, as I indicated that the issues about economic and environmental purpose. Therefore, another question is that I wanted to find out from you whether there's any duplication with this, which we're trying to do today, with other departments, because it seems to me there is an interlink. For example, you put the Department of Environment and the Defense and the like. So, what if there is any impact? because I'm afraid the situation whereby we maybe support you at the same time, there's still somewhere, there's still a gap. How do you interact with those people, and how is it married to some of these departments, so that you can maybe take us on board in that regard? Thank you.
Thank you very much, DJ.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. Let me start with the last one first. The roles that each of us play. The duties role in the sea is first prevention. We are there to prevent that spillages, environmental hazards do not happen. The role of the Department of Environmental Affairs is combating. Once in the event protection or prevention did not happen, spillage does happen, then it's no longer the duty's role, but the role of the Department of Environmental Affairs to combat what has happened. The role of the Department of Defense is the security. It protects and provides territorial security to the waters of the Republic. So those are the three different responsibilities. So there are instances where there is need for serious collaboration. As earlier I said, because of SAMHSA's technology and the investments we've made in what they generally call the long-range identification and tracking system, we are in a position to provide defensive intelligence and say there is this thing, please look at it. And they therefore can be in a position to protect. In our case, once we detect, we therefore activate the prevention and the preventative measures. In the event the preventative measures fail, therefore, accounting. So that's there is slight overlap, but the roles are very distinct. So that's how I can, in simple ways, Chairperson, if I can explain it, hopefully I've been in a position to explain. To deal with the issues as raised by both Honorable Ramatlakane and Honorable Sobhani around the Section 18, I would ask Usipho again to come. But as I said, we may approach this thing in two different ways. One is that because we have existing regulations under your court state control, all you need to do is then come up with regulations. Draft regulation issue, gazette for comments and interactions. But secondly, as Siko indicated, we have an act, the Salvage and Something Act. That act, Section 18, if indeed we have to come and amend that act, or, as he said, come up with a totally different act altogether, so we're in a position to therefore take the entire convention, use the new act, we'll have to come to Parliament. So we will domesticate it. So the issue for me, and this is the issue that probably will discuss, and once that discussion is held, we'll advise the Minister on how best we can do, and then we'll then communicate with the community. But we have those options, but it would make sense that we rather come up with a new act completely, because what we dealt with at the time of the Salvage Act may be totally different to what the Nairobi Convention deals with now and into the future. I think to the issues raised by the Honorable Jose. One is we've been working with National Treasury, and we've now agreed and have incentives now to incentivize ship owners to register. SAMHSA has been given the responsibility now to go out to market that, get people on our register. So we are, in fact, doing it. We're not necessarily going to put pressure on insurance companies, but we're going to incentivize ship owners, because our target is to get ship owners to come in and register and be. So South Africa then becomes a flag state. You remember, we used to have ships registered under the flag, but we want to do that. In terms of conditions of employment, there are now conventions that seek to deal with this matter uniformly across all people on board vessels. Because, yes, the Philippines were in an advantage because they were able to deploy a lot of the seafarers same applies with South Africa through the intervention that SAMHSA has been doing of training, so being able to now create that pool. But you can create a massive pool if we have flag, I mean ships that carry your flag, because you can deploy some of other people to train on board those flag carrying vessels. So it becomes an advantage. So you then have state vessels that are owned by the state that can do that duty to train and provide the, and then you have private sector ships that are carrying out. So we'll do that. So we are working on that. So the points you're raising are correct, that we are in work with Treasury. Now we are busy now getting some something to do what they have to do. In terms of roadworthiness of ships, Sipo talked about it, that there's what they call surveyor. If a ship is not seaworthy, we will not let it leave our port. In terms of, I don't know what convention it is though, but any state that is a signatory and a participant is duty bound to not let an unseaworthy. My apologies, Chair. An unseaworthy ship. Maybe it's because I'm sitting opposite Honorable Mlaotse. But a state is duty bound not to let any unseaworthy ship sail. Because if, for an example, an unseaworthy ship, the last port of call was South Africa. South Africa becomes the responsible party now because it let an unseaworthy ship sail. So there are those checks and balances that are being put, and therefore, hence, it becomes important that the work that SAMHSA does in its surveying of ships is of serious international and complies with the regulations and international convention. I'll ask Sipo and other team members to come in on particularly Article 12, but also the issue of the blowback vessel that is there, because we did all that we could, and let me ask the experts in the area to come and check if you don't mind. I'll then close with the issue of cabinet approval being 2018 October, and why are we coming in now? Thanks.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. That's why it is of utmost importance for the country to be a state party to this convention. Because you remember, we cannot disallow ships to use waters, be it at the high sea or territorial waters. We've got one clause which allows ships to have freedom of navigation. But then, for the fact that we don't have the convention that compels ship owners to have insurance on board with regard to removal of wreck, so we couldn't impose any obligation for the ship owner to remove the wreck. Because in most cases, the ship owners, when they see that their ship is becoming a wreck, once a ship is a wreck, it has less value. So the best thing, instead of removing the wreck that is going to cost millions and millions of rands, they decide to abandon the ship and they disappear. And as I was explaining before, that most of those ship owners that abandon ships, they are registered in the flag of convenience. So it will not be easy to trace the ship owner. But even when you try to trace the ship owner, it will cost more on legal costs to try to allocate that ship owner, hoping that you will find that particular person. So that's the problem that we're sitting with this the Cape Town incident, which is 31. But then they had other insurance on board, which it relates to oil. We allowed it because on the prevention part, as far as oil is concerned, they had that particular insurance. But on the removal of wreck, then they didn't have that insurance. That's why the wreck is still sitting in our waters. So this is one of the proposals to have the convention and enactment of national legislation to be in place to prevent such recurring trends. Just to add on the other one for encouraging South Africans to own ships. As the DG has stated that we've interacted with the Treasury, and there has been initiatives in place, basically because now it has been adopted that there will be zero taxation in international tax. And we're talking about withholding tax, we talk about CFR tax, we talk about tax on dividends. So those are some of the incentives that are in place, but they are not enough because a ship is nothing without a cargo. So the biggest problem is, what's the use of having a ship while you cannot move any cargo? So one of the issues that are still on the table and were part of the PAKISA initiative was that how can you allocate cargo to the South African interested ship owners? And on the issue of labor, we just adopted the Maritime Labor Convention. It is the ILO convention. It talks about social economic issues or social welfare of seafarers. It also talks about the basic wage, your leave, and so forth. So forth. That is tantamount to your basic conditions of employment. So there are mechanisms in place. There are initiatives in place. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DG. Have you responded to all honourable members' questions?
No, I left one, which is the issue around the process. We approved, cabinet approved in 2013 and here. I think there were the other competitive processes, as you said, cabinet approved, but we then had to go back and get involved and get stakeholder interaction and engagement. And that's, then there was the second report that came to the minister. I think that was the process, but let me ask Bernard or Om to just to indicate the process since the October to now.
It was approved last day October, if I'm not mistaken. And then it was supposed to go to come to portfolio committee early this year in 2014, but because of elections and then everything stopped. And then
administration doesn't go on election.
Yes.
Well.
Administration is why are they? I'm
not involved.
Yeah.
But you're involved.
No, thanks, Chair. I think there was that process of engaging a number of other stakeholders. Because one of the issues we began to do is whatever we take through IMO, a matter that we think requires us to therefore consult broadly, because we are a representative body of a number of interested parties, including people from Gangwanas.
Thank you very much. I think members, we are agreeing that we procedurally will process and table the report in Parliament, in the National Assembly, for this IMO convention to be ratified by Parliament. And I think let's go into the processing of the report. It will be tabled before the committee for approval before we can be able to send it. 10 minutes comfort break, and then we will go into the next agenda item, which is the Auditor General. Honourable.
Mm-hmm.
said, let's finalize with this one, that we approve it official, and you read for us the statement after that, when after we have adopted it. Let's adopt it. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you very much, Honorable Sibande. We have considered this matter on the Nairobi International Convention on the Removal of Wrecks 2001 today. Our having considered this in a convention, we will request approval for by Parliament for the International Convention on Removal of Wrecks and explanatory notes and memorandum to the convention referred to the House will be made. And therefore, as per the section 231 of the Constitution, subsection 2, we have to recommend this to Parliament for approval. Can we agree to that? I move that we agree to this. Is there a seconder or a thirder? Honorable Hamsinga, Honorable De Freitas are seconding all of us. Thank you very much.
Let's have a break now and go to the
I'm cold.